Does work stress you out? Maybe make you really anxious? We can relate. Today on Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health, we're going to dive into the question, how do you manage your mental health at work? Stay tuned.
Go. Hi, I'm Joss.
And I'm Char.
And together, we're two ladies just talking about mental health.
We come from very different backgrounds, race, family, religion, but we share one major thing in common. We both have tendencies towards anxiety and depression.
And while we don't have any mental health degrees or credentials, we do consider ourselves experts in our own mental health journeys because we live it daily.
Together, we'll share some tips, stories, and interview mental health experts and guests with lived experiences.
Because we believe that sharing stories is key to destigmatizing mental health and feeling less alone.
Join us. We're two ladies just talking about mental health.
Hi, listeners. I'm Joss from Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health with Joss and Char. If you're experiencing a mental health emergency or crisis, please remember these three numbers, 988. By calling or texting 988, you can speak with or chat with a mental health professional who can help you. Someone's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You don't have to suffer alone, and help is just three digits away. So write this down, 988. And if you don't have access to a phone, please go to your nearest emergency room for immediate care.
Hi, Joss.
Hi, Char. How are you?
Oh, it's been a week, but yes. Before we get into it, let's do our mental health tip of the day. So this tip I learned recently from Dr. Aditi Narukar, and I heard it on Carolyn Chambers' podcast, So Into That, episode 13. And I'll tell you a little bit about Dr. Narukar later, but the tip is called Stop, Breathe, Be. S-B-B.
I like it. S-B-B.
And it's pretty much that. Throughout the day, even when you're not anxious, you stop. Take a big, deep breath, and you be. So whatever that means to you, whether it's grounding and feeling your feet on the floor, or just looking around your environment away from your screen if you're at work. So let's do it together. Ready? Stop. Big belly breath. Breathe. Be. How you feel?
The being is the noticing, right?
I think so. I think okay. It's whatever it is to you. I know you and I always want to do it right, but I think it's whatever that be, that being present. Mm. So basically what's very cool about, and I highly recommend listening to this podcast, we'll put a link for it, but Dr. Narukar wrote a book called The Five Resets, Rewire Your Brain and Body for Less Stress and More Resilience. Mm. She has a science background. So she, in the podcast with Carolyn Chambers, she talks about some concrete tips that can help you move your body from a stress state, which is that sympathetic fight and flight nervous system, to the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and digest. So the stop, breathe, be attempts to help us kind of regulate our stress by helping us move back into that rest and digest state and away from the panic of the fight or flight state. And I actually used it all week this week because I started a new part-time job and my anxiety was pumping. And I used Stop, Breathe, Be a lot this week when I could remember to do so. So that's our tip of the week.
Thank you, Char. Such a wonderful tip. I do feel a little better after I just let out that. I think for me it was the breath, because I tend to hold, you know, whatever tension I'm feeling, I just go through it. And I just, you know, got to keep going. No time to think to breathe. But even in like physical exercise, my trainer is always like, don't forget to breathe, because you do. You forget to breathe. You just want to get whatever you're doing done and not really think about the fact that your body actually needs a breath. So
yeah, and it's,
thank you.
You know, you're welcome. And what I like about it too is that breath, like when we get anxious, and they talk about this in Carolyn Chambers podcast episode 13, when we get anxious, we can start taking these like chest breaths, almost like hyperventilating up here, but the Stop, Breathe, Be, you actually want to like puff out your belly like a balloon. Like with little kids, we call it balloon breath. With adults, we call it diaphragmatic breathing, because your diaphragm, you fill your lungs so much that your diaphragm pushes down and your belly comes out. So that diaphragmatic breath, that deeper in the belly, I was doing it at my desk. I was trying to make my belly touch the desk, like touch the desk. I was in a panic.
I agree. This whole week, I should have been, I wish I knew about the tip. This was a week for me. It was fantastic. And I say that just, it was crazy.
Well, let's get into it. But first, let's take a quick break. Okay. And yeah, we'll get into our weeks.
All righty.
All right. Welcome back, listeners. Joss.
We're back.
We're checking in. How are you doing?
Yeah. Before we go into the question of the day, how about I talk about the fact that I didn't know today there was a time change. And so I guess we lost an hour of sleep. And last night I knew that last week I was quite tired when we started recording. So I said, you know, you're going to bed early tonight, Jocelyn. I was being so organized. I was a good girl. I went to bed. I woke up, it was 7, and I was like, look at me. I'm amazing. Waking up at 7 on Saturday. So I get up. I go about my life.
Today's Sunday.
On Sunday, as you can see. And so I'm like, look at you getting up so early, you know, doing your thing. I'm going to be ready for this podcast. I'm going to be refreshed. I'm going to already have had my coffee.
Yeah.
So I get up, wash my face, kind of like put little clothes on. I was like, whoo, I can't believe all of my clocks in my house were 7 something. Okay.
Yeah.
Continue to go about. I was like, I'll have my coffee closer to when it's time for the podcast so I can have it. And Char, then I sent you the text message, because then I looked at my iPhone and my iPhone said, it's 9:30. And I was like, there's no way it's 9:30. It's 8:30. Because all of my clocks are at 8:30. And I've been looking at them all week. And I've been getting to work on time. So there's no way that these aren't wrong. And then I was like, I know this is going to look so crazy. She's going to think I'm a nutcase. But I'm going to text her. And I texted you and said, weird question. What time is it? Yeah.
Not weird at all. Not weird at all.
Again, very grateful that I'm on a podcast with a person who understands what happens, all the panic that goes into, I wasn't aware of this.
But the next text you sent me really sums up the anxiety for me. Because you were like, wait, was I late to work every day this week by an hour? I was like, oh, there it is. There's the anxiety. Wait. Was I late to everything by 1 hour this whole week? When did daylight savings time start?
You see how you don't function properly when you're having like anxiety?
Yeah.
Like you don't even like that didn't even make sense. Like now, because I know it was daylight savings. Okay, fine. But do you understand? I felt like I was in the twilight zone.
I had no one that was in this time zone other than you to text to ask that because I knew I'd be judged from other people.
So
I
said, I can ask. At all.
I can ask because you don't judge.
No, because I've done that before. And I heard the panic through the text message. And it, yeah, it just sums it up. Like when you like second guess yourself and then imagine you're like adrenaline spiked, like, holy shit, have I been late for everything? Where am I? What's going on? Why didn't anybody tell me I was an hour late for work every
day? That's the question. I was like, no one confronted me. But then you think about it. I got to work and all the clocks were the same as my, why would I have thought?
Yeah, but you're not thinking logically when you're panicked. No, it's like rule of thumb is go by the iPhone. Go by the iPhone because it does it automatically.
Yeah, which was Charlotte's answer to the question. Your iPhone is correct.
Well, I was like, how can I respond as clearly as possible? Because I'm pretty sure she's anxious right now. So, you know, next time, if that happens again, you can do Dr. Narukar's tip. Stop. Breathe. Be. And then we proceed. And actually, one of the things she said is practice this even when you're not anxious. Like do it before you walk through the front door of your home or you get in the car. So you're just so practiced that if when you are anxious, it's already a positive habit. Because when I'm anxious, I forget all my tools. Every single tool goes out the window.
Well, for me, not only that, I mean, I know this is a very anxious person's response to this, but if I only do it when I'm anxious, I'm still going to be like, things are still a little bit of mess. Like nothing's changed. So I do think it's important to check in with yourself when you are feeling well, when nothing's going wrong, because if you're constantly, whenever you're doing this exercise and things still aren't resolved, because I do like things to be resolved. Mm-hmm. And if they're not resolved, because technically the time was still wrong on the phone. Like I was still like, this is the wrong time.
Right. It's not resolved.
So even if I would, but it still didn't make sense to me. I mean, thank God I had a person I could text.
Always. No weird questions.
I think we need to move on. Yeah.
Let's take a break
and then we'll come back and talk about what really matters and what this podcast is really about today.
And our question of the day.
Yay.
Okay.
Stay tuned. All right, we're back. And so it's time for the question of the day. And so I know Charlotte started a new job this week, so I really thought it's really important that we ask her this question first, because first off, I want to know a lot about it. So Charlotte, the question of the day is, how do you manage your mental health at work?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, Jocelyn. My immediate response is with great difficulty.
Agreed.
So I started a new part-time job this week. It's a temporary position. I think it'll only be a few months. And, you know, they basically brought me in to help with an immediate massive project. And, you know, so everybody's kind of on edge and everything feels like an emergency because the big project is in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And I'm coming in 2 weeks before the big project.
Oof.
So, you know, I'm coming into this environment where everybody's so nice and so high achieving and everything feels like an emergency because there's a deadline and there's a time crunch. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting these messages, my nervous system, like it's an emergency. It's an emergency. Everything is high stakes. And that's not great for my anxiety.
Right. But do you feel like on your normal life, you often feel that way anyway to begin with? So then when someone adds like this time crunch on there, that it makes it more difficult?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Because in other situations, it might be like, it's not an emergency. Stop, breathe, be. Look at the reality.
Yeah.
But this time the reality is it's an emergency. Yeah. So what's been interesting, I'll say interesting and really difficult this week is it's been a while since I've experienced this level of anxiety. So I'll just share listeners. I've been unemployed for a little over a year. It was mental health related. I was in a period of depression, couldn't get out of bed, body felt heavy, sleeping all the time, couldn't really focus for more than 15 to 30 minutes at a time. Was having trouble understanding direction. So all these things that related to work, you know, my depression was really a factor. So I've been unemployed, and most recently I've been depressed. You know, with a lot of work and help the past few months, I've been feeling more like myself, which is just such a relief.
So great. Yeah.
But this was a reminder of what anxiety feels like in my body with this new job. And I was like, you know, I knew we were going to talk about it this week. So I was kind of like making mental notes of how my body was reacting. And it was like, my body temperature would get increased. So I would get hot and my adrenaline was like pumping. So sometimes I'd like black out and be like, wait, what did I just do? Did I do that already? Cause I was so escalated, second guessing myself, insecure, felt like a runaway train, like I couldn't do anything right. And logically, I know, like, hey, they just brought me on temporarily to help out where I can, to take, you know, little mundane tasks off their plate for this big event. So I know that logically, but my body is responding like it's fight or flight emergency. So yeah. I was doing that stop, breathe, be, I don't know, like five times a day at my desk, in the bathroom, you know, doing the belly breathing to touch my desk with my belly to breathe deep.
Which is a good distraction too. The fact that you focused on physically what your body looked like, not just how it felt too.
Yeah. And again, sometimes I was able to access that and remember to do that. And other times I was just a goner. So, you know, and you and I have talked about this, you know, throughout, I'm trying to look like a normal person.
That's what I was thinking. Like, what is everyone else acting like at work? This is my whole thing. Like, and everyone else is probably just acting normal. And in your mind, you're like, they know.
Yeah.
They know I'm stressed out. Okay. Yeah. I was wondering if you felt that way.
Yeah. Like the masking, like how would a normal person without anxiety sit right now? You're laughing.
And I'm laughing because it's real. Like that's the way it feels. That is the way it feels, Charlotte.
And I shouldn't say normal. I should say like neurotypical, right? Or someone who doesn't struggle with mental health. But like, we're like trying to hide it because if it was a long-term job, you know, I know you mentioned last week, your boss knows you and looks out for you.
Yeah.
And you've built that relationship and she's protective of you. If this was a long-term job, I probably would disclose that I have a disability in the form because depression, clinical depression, anxiety are on the list of disabilities for job accommodations. So I'd probably disclose that, but I'm not going to be there for that long. So
yeah.
Do I really have to tell them and like be vulnerable? I don't want to. How did you tell your boss? Like, how long have you been working together? How did you tell your boss?
I didn't. My book told her. Like, okay. Literally, I have been working with her for years. Okay, no, I'll be honest. I started working for this boss about 4 months before the pandemic hit, 4 or 5 months before the pandemic hit. So you think about it, I was in what you're in right now when I first started the job. So I started the job. I was still trying to get used to the job. I had no idea whether or not I was doing well or if I wasn't doing well. I felt like everyone's smiling at me saying that they liked me. But you know, when you got anxiety, you're like, are they lying to me? When are they going to tell me I'm messing up? Like, when is the other shoe going to drop?
We're just waiting. Yeah,
you're waiting for the moment that they're going to be like, some criticism, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're waiting for it, right?
Totally.
So we didn't know each other that long, even though I felt like we had a really good rapport. So it was like during the pandemic where I had to, you know, 100% switch to remote. We completely didn't go into the office. It was like overnight. We went from, there's this thing called COVID. And then again, I thought I was going to get a 2-week break, which I was very excited about.
Yeah. Right? We all were. We thought it would be 2 weeks.
And literally, I thought I manifested that in my life. I had written that on my list of 10 things for 100 days. How do I work remote? I really thought that I manifested the pandemic. Isn't that crazy? Anyway, I thought it was going to be a couple weeks. And then I felt like we really built our rapport from that distance, because we were both kind of, I mean, the whole world was going through, whether or not you had anxiety prior or not, I mean, if you had it or didn't have it, all of our senses were just heightened. Our stress levels were high. No one knew what the hell was happening. I felt like the whole world was feeling like kind of what I used to feel every day anyway, that anticipation of like, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, and I'm just going to have to deal with it. And I'm going to have to just grin and bear it. So then I started writing the book, like actually pulling all these stories out that I had written and starting writing some from stories afresh. But we were working 100% remote, so she had no idea how intensely I was working on the book. I don't think she understood what I was going through. We had a lot of time. We only saw each other on Zoom every once in a while. But she didn't understand, like every time we were in a Zoom call with students, because I specifically stir mostly, Black students, the stress of the students, like the students who, you know, they had to reveal to their professors on the camera that they share a room with like 3-4 different people, and two of the people have COVID in the room, and all these things that,
wow,
we didn't realize that college was an escape for a lot of students. It was an escape. It was them being able to live in a world that did not judge them. And then all of a sudden, everything that's in your real life, everything that's in your real life is now in the classroom.
Yeah. And on camera, because some professors probably, I know in my experience taking classes during COVID, professors wanted the camera on. To make sure that you were there. So then suddenly you're exposed.
Correct.
Maybe you didn't want that information shared.
Yes. And so I myself was dealing with the stress of, obviously dealing with the stress of COVID, but then I'm trying to tell the students, all is well, don't worry, we're all going to get through it. And then I loved that little leave button on Zoom, because you'd hit that leave button and be like, oh my God, it's over. Like I loved that little button. The leave meeting.
Yes.
And so people had no idea that when I pushed leave, I was like, I hate my life. Mm. Like, I was just like, this is really hard. This is, you know, it was isolating, right? So writing the book, going back to all these memories of times when I struggled a great deal, obviously with anxiety, realizing also that I had been dealing with anxiety since I was very, very little, from my earliest memories. And depression, and then going through those feelings. And maybe that's why, you know, I was able to describe those feelings so well too in the book.
Yeah.
Was because I was also feeling them at the moment that I was writing the book.
Right.
So when I finished the book, literally my boss was the first person that I told that I published the book. And she was like, I'll buy it right now. And she bought it.
Wow.
Like literally right away. And she started reading it. And she was just like, this is like a brilliant example of what, as people who work in education, we have no idea what people have gone through. And then we are judging people to and expecting all students to perform at the same level. We're expecting all students to come into the classroom and have the same focus and find the same importance of like physically being in the classroom and focusing on the subject matter. Right. And there's a lot of reasons why people cannot focus on the subject matter. Or totally. They don't connect with an instructor, or they don't go to office hour, or they don't do those things. So I think that she looked at it more of like, Jocelyn, I can't believe you've gone through that. Not only that, you look like all is well. And don't we always? I mean, I think if you're an expert at masking, you always look like everything's going well.
Yep.
You always do. So you think about what you've been doing this week, Char, and what you've been doing this week is because you've master this skill that in some ways is necessary for survival, because you don't want to share that with everyone and you don't know that you won't be judged. And I think one of the reasons why I was really wanting to do this podcast with you is because I think people need to understand that the labels that come along, the shame that comes along with, you know, having a mental health issue or having a crisis or whatever, people don't talk about those things because they're afraid of being judged. And so you were afraid this week of like, oh my God, if I tell them this, then is everyone gonna now put on like, you know, little special gloves and treat me like I have like a disease, you know?
And that has happened before. Sometimes mm-hmm. I've had, when I've told bosses, like during COVID, because we were all talking about mental health, it gave me mm-hmm. permission to tell my bosses yeah. at the time, I'm really mm. struggling with my mental health. That felt more acceptable in that COVID context. But then yeah. At another job, you know, P.S., during this period of depression, I tried to work at a grocery store.
Yes.
I lasted 3 months. I disclosed to them about my disability, my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I told the head boss, and she was like, do you mind if I tell the other, you know, managers? And I said, of course, I'd rather them know that there's a reason why I'm working slowly, because I'm overwhelmed or I have a slower processing speed. I'd rather they know. But then those gloves came out and people mm-hmm. were like, how's it going? I was like, no, I didn't want you to treat me different.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it also depends. Like, that's why I think it's so amazing that your boss, that book gave her a window into your soul. She looked at it in terms of, we never know everybody's story.
Yep.
We just never know. And now she, like you said last week, she tries to protect you and make sure mm-hmm. you don't get overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I am exhausted this weekend Same. From the masking. I am mm-hmm. so, I feel like I have an emotional hangover from all the effort it was taking, not only to learn the new information, be helpful, not be a burden that I'm working so slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And masking and trying to look normal and trying to be positive and trying to be, you know, a person someone wants to be around in the office.
Mm. So like for next week, obviously you have to go next week, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think, what would you have done differently this week, or what do you plan to do differently next week that you feel like might have been more helpful? I mean, because I feel like the first week of dealing with how do I mask? I mean, because we wear a different mask for different jobs, right?
Right.
You wear a different mask around different people. You were just trying to figure out which mask to wear and how, you know, tight it needs to be on and, you know, how transparent it could be and all this stuff this week. So I've always see that as that acclimation kind of mask. Now that you've started the acclimation process for this job, what do you think you're going to do differently? And what'll, you know what I mean? Like, what do you do differently next week?
It's a great question. I don't have the answer.
Okay.
what I am trying to tell myself is like, I'm just here to help. Like, I'm just here to help. If I wasn't here, they'd be having to do this task. So let me just do it. And I can do all these little things, but like kind of just almost acting like I'm a volunteer so that I lower the stakes in my mind.
That's smart.
Not yeah. like I'm trying to get a full-time job here. I'm not. I'm just trying to be helpful. Like, oh, well, anything that I do is something they don't have to do. That's something off their plate. So it doesn't matter how fast or slow I do it.
Okay.
But sometimes I can remember that. And sometimes I do get caught up in like the emergency, because the truth is it's a big event. And when you're planning an event, every detail matters.
Yeah.
And I try to tell myself with anxiety, oh, it's not a big deal. It'll be great. You know, not every detail matters. There are priorities and non-priorities, but in this context, everything feels, like I said, like urgent and like a priority. So I'm exhausted. I'm drained from all that effort this week. And I know you had a really big week too, and I want to hear about that. So let's take a break.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about how you manage anxiety at work, or even just how did you manage your anxiety this week? Because it was a very different week for you.
Okay.
Okay.
But can I ask you before we go on the break though?
Okay.
How are you feeling at this moment? Are you more looking in the rearview mirror going, where did I, you know, what did I do wrong? What didn't I get right?
No, luckily I'm not doing that. Good. I'm more like worried about the week to come.
Okay.
That Sunday scary dread.
I know. Yeah. That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Let's talk more after the break.
Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
All right. It's my turn to ask Joss, how do you manage your mental health at work, Joss?
I mean, usually, and I will say this, I think I'm at a much better place, and I am growing, I feel, daily and yearly in my mental health strength. I have done a lot of work, obviously, in my personal life to keep myself, to have some kind of balance and some time where I'm not stressed about work. You know, in the past, there used to be like, oh, I got to hang out with a friend or talk to this person on the phone that drains me, or do all these other things that drain me in my personal life. So I was 24 hours a day supporting other people's needs and, you know, aspirations and making them feel good about themselves. And that's exhausting. Like, yeah. Supporting other people and their mental health journey is exhausting. And so the work that I do every day is kind of that. I work in a community college. I specifically support Black and Brown students. You know, the community college is definitely a catch-all. So there is no, like, none of my students are the same. None of their situations are the same. Some of them are doing fantastic in college. Some of them are struggling. There's a lot of mental health issues that are obviously have come to the forefront, especially after COVID. And so on the daily basis, I would say the way that I'm managing work is like, okay, like a tennis match. It's like, okay, the ball is going to come over here. Okay, the ball is going to go over there. It's kind of go, you know, and the more the balls are coming in so many different ways, different angles on the court, you know, when I get to the balls, and I do, I feel like I almost don't miss any balls. Nothing goes out. Nothing. Like, I'm really good at making sure that I manage so many different things.
You are.
But I know when I get home at the end of the day, how many different angles. Like, was I playing Serena Williams today? Probably. Yes. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Some days I feel like I was literally playing like Serena Williams, or I was playing, and then some days I'm like, whew, I played some kindergartners today. So that's what I'm saying. That's what it feels like. That's the only way I know how to put it in an analogy of how I manage work. Do I think I'm successful all the time? No. Do I feel like, you know, I could have done things differently sometimes? Mm-hmm. And do I feel that sometimes I oftentimes say yes too many times? All the time. So this particular week was killer because it was obviously the first week that we've had our podcast, which has been nice for me because I am paying attention a lot more to, you know, that daily struggle of mental health and how it affects my daily life and how I'm thinking throughout the day. And am I looking out for myself or am I looking out for others more than I'm looking out for myself? This particular week, after the first episode, I was, you know, obviously supposed to go in and edit, and I couldn't find a moment to edit because I was working my full-time job. And also, my sister, who's a single parent who I'm very close to. She is away for the next 2 weeks in Japan. And so I'm watching her son. Okay.
Right.
And parenting, I don't know how people do it 24 hours a day. But the idea that I was already just my own life without a child, without the responsibility, like I got to pick up my nephew. Sometimes I have to pick him up. Sometimes I pick him up from school but it's so rare. And it's not like when we get home, I also need to make sure that he's done his homework and he's not on the video game 24 hours a day and that he's eating dinner and that he showers and that he goes to bed and that he gets up and I make sure everything's good in the morning and I'm listening to his conversations to make sure he's good and trying to be intuitive of that. All of that kind of mental health, mental work that I'm doing after leaving work was so crazy. And then obviously I'm sleeping in her house. I'm not sleeping in my own bed, which that, you know, some of the things that I think are really helpful with mental health is you have to get into routines and rituals. There are routines and rituals that I do every day that I realize when I'm not in my own space and I'm kind, you know, I get a little bit off. Oh my God. Like,
I know.
I realized like I needed to be in my own bed this morning and do my meditation before I got my feet up and left to, you know, go get in the shower or whatever. So there are these things like this week in particular, how did I manage my mental health? Not well.
Yeah.
Not well. I mean, I didn't. I felt like by the end of the week, I was a failure. I felt like I was yesterday, so exhausted. This whole week, so exhausted. But some of it is the guilt that I think that we... And that's where anxiety, I think, is so problematic and so stifling in our lives, is when we worry about that you're letting down someone, even though you're not letting anyone down. There is, I don't know if you have that, Char. I don't know.
That's what it was all week. They brought me on and I'm not being helpful. I'm guilty that I'm a burden. Totally. It's guilt. It's guilt that I'm not. Mm-hmm. Doing it. But also to point out to you to validate your exhaustion, it sounds like, you know, essentially parenting when you came home was continuing a different kind of tennis match.
That's right.
Because you're fielding all those tennis balls at work and then you're fielding all those tennis balls after work. And normally after work is your time to decompress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's that loss of, and so I think that's so, you know, and in some ways too, there is this feeling of, I wish I could, like, you think you're so much better. Like you think you're good. You think like, if something changes in my routine, I'm going to be fine. To me, it's a reminder that, you know what, Jocelyn, this is your life and you have to accept that anxiety is present in your life and you have to take really good care of yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, unfortunately sometimes be like, nope, can't do that. And like I said, you know, this week and there was a conference, I was at a conference 2 days the week. So Monday through Wednesday, I was trying to make sure everything at work was good because I knew that I had 2 days a week that I wasn't going to be able to work because I would be at the conference. Mm-hmm. And then at the conference, I'm having to talk and be and hello, how are you doing? Oh, nice to meet you. Good to see. Like I was in this whole other arena. So there were so many things that got changed this week that I think, I know that's why I was so exhausted yesterday. And then again, the time changed this morning. And imagine, I had no idea. Like, what iPhone? We lost an hour. I needed an hour. Like, I felt like almost like, oh my God, so betrayed by the universe this morning, because I knew that one, there is the Sunday scaries that of like, I got to be at work tomorrow morning and I get Jackson back. I have to pick up my nephew from school tomorrow, you know, tomorrow, because luckily for the weekend, he was with his dad. So I got to pick him up from school on Monday and we're starting this thing all over again.
Wow.
So this week in particular, this the question of the day is not the normal. It's not the norm. And that is what's keeping me going, is knowing, like, you know, she's back next week. But I have a whole lot of respect for mothers who are working, who are managing. And I would say parents in general, because obviously you have men and, you know, women and non, you know, conforming folks who are also raising children 24 hours a day, and being responsible for the next generation is a struggle, especially if you have to do it in your home and then go to work and pay the bills and, you know, try to stay alive. So yeah, this week was pretty insane, you know.
So I'll ask you what you asked me. What do you want to do this week? Maybe that's different or the same to support your mental health, knowing you're still taking care of your nephew this week. You still have to show up at work. It's the last week taking care of your nephew, but it's still a week. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I do anything different. That's what's weird. I don't know if I do anything different. It was just, it wasn't that I felt like I failed. It was, and I'm saying I didn't fail with other people. I think it's the, you know what I mean? And, you know, Shari, I talked about this earlier when we were on break discussing, you know, this idea that some of the anxiety comes from this idea that I am trying to please myself and I am hypercritical. I am hyper in my head thinking things should go a certain way. So it's almost like I've written this script and this whole film and all the scenes are like this. And then none of the scenes happen the way they were supposed to happen. And now I'm frustrated. And the reality is, it's a damn film. Like, it's not even real. But in your head, as a person with a lot of anxiety, I don't know if you have this, Charlotte, but I oftentimes feel that it's just part of my routine, that I always create in my head, or I make this agreement in my head that things are always going to go a certain way before I go into a situation. And I have this huge idea of myself that things are going to be you know how amazing you are, Jocelyn? You are going to do this thing. And then I get into the situation. Now, mind you, no one else that's in the situation knows that I've written this whole script and film and stuff. And they're thinking everything's been fine. And I'm just in there going, that wasn't right. That wasn't right. This wasn't right. That wasn't right. You failed.
Yeah. I don't know that I have a script, but I hold myself to unattainable standards that I would never put on anybody else. And I'm taking score. That was wrong. That was wrong. Ooh, that person looks annoyed with me. I did something wrong there. I messed up on that phone call. I did this thing wrong. And then it turns into this whole cycle for me. Then I don't trust myself. So I make more mistakes. On the break, you said, I wrote it down. I'm sword fighting with perfectionism all day long.
Yep. It really is. It's like I'm literally fencing, you know, like, oh, how perfect is this? Is not. And I realize, don't get me wrong, I know that perfection doesn't exist. I know, you know, very deeply.
And nobody else is expecting perfectionism. No. But I'm like, that, I'm expecting perfection. And I have to be the best temp they've ever seen. And I have to do it the best thing. I'm going to blow them all out of the water. And it's so much pressure. And then, like you said, nope, wrong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I leave feeling terrible about myself and guilty that I did a bad job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, the reason why I want things to be perfect is because I don't do well with the criticism. It's because I don't want to get depressed. It's because I don't want to get further, you know, have more anxiety, or I don't want anybody else in the room to experience anxiety. So there's this idea of, I don't want my boss to feel stressed because I feel stressed and I don't manage it well. So I don't want them to manage stress because I know, and don't we know this from so many places that we've worked, when your boss is stressed, automatically I already feel stressed. Mm-hmm. And then the way they manage stress is different than I do. So it's, there is a control factor as to why I feel like everything needs to be a certain way, because it's, I need to control my own mental health. I want to very much stay away from being depressed. I want to avoid, you know, having to look back at what happened today and reassess it and go, you got an F, you got an F, you know, like, you know? So there is that, right? I mean, it's awful.
Nobody would ever say that to you, and you would never say that to anybody else. Right. My best friend and I call it our inner terrorist. You know, instead of like having an angel and the devil on your shoulders, it's like there's this inner terrorist, like, oh, you did that. You just messed up. Like, like, what are you going to do if that happens? Oh, that's, you know, it's just like this inner terrorist who torments us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know what you mean. Like, you're trying to also manage your boss's stress. Like, I went into a whole shame spiral this week because I had a small task to do. I made a mistake, and it was something that I didn't have like the authority or permission to fix. So my boss had to fix. I'm like, look at you, Charlotte. You're making more work for your boss. Uh-huh. You put another thing on her plate when she didn't have to have that. And it's going to take her time. And all this badgering, beating up inner terrorist. And again, logically, we know we don't have to be perfect. Nobody's expecting us to be perfect. Logically, we know that, but emotionally or whatever it is, our nervous systems override.
And our past experiences override. I think for me, my memory overrides.
What do you mean?
Like, you know, growing up in a family where my parents were super critical of everything. So you really just couldn't make a mistake because there were so many kids. And if you make a mistake, you're literally standing in front of the audience of 10 other people who are like, you don't know what you're doing. So you get used to being shamed in a very public way.
Wow.
And I think as a child with the large family, it's very, and I think all my siblings, if I brought all my siblings on the show, they'd all say the same thing. The idea of public shame was almost a tool that my parents could use to keep us in line.
Mm-hmm.
So, because, and like you're saying, you want to fix it before your boss has to fix it, and then you're pissed that you can't fix it because you don't want them to find. So this idea of public shaming, how many times do we try, like, you know, in episode one, you know, I was like, before they're going to find out, I'm going to cool down this computer in the freezer. You know, you're doing all these things to try to fix within your own power,
right,
things so that no one knows that you screw up. And I mean, that's not something that it's not a daily thing. It's not like I'm like every day saying to myself, you're going to screw up this or you're going to fuck up that. That's not.
I am.
Oh. Well, I've sometimes graduated from that.
That's great. That gives me hope.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've gotten, but you know what, Charlotte, I do a lot of work. I'm saying it is a lot of work to protect yourself mentally. And yeah. Sometimes it's doing things that are very unpopular. Sometimes it means you're by yourself a lot. I spend a lot of time by myself.
I cancel plans all the time. Cancel.
Or just don't go.
Don't go.
I need those moments to just be like, I don't want to be the administrative assistant of this event. So I'm leaving. Good. Because that's what I'm doing. Yeah. Technically, everything I go to, I'm going to support everybody. I'm going to read everyone's needs and let me help you with this and that.
And the thing is, because listeners, I actually met Jocelyn in a work environment.
Very true.
Right? And I was in awe of you at this job because you were so on top of everything. You were so efficient. It was like, I don't know what, how to get that package delivered. And I'd ask you and you'd have an answer for me in 5 minutes. And you were managing everything. You're the best administrator I've ever met.
Thanks, Char.
Seriously. You know, I didn't know you were suffering at that time. And we can get into that in another episode because you were performing so highly. And I was like, just so in awe. Like, she always has the answers. She's fun. She's funny. But she's so efficient. If she doesn't know the answer, she finds it for you. But because you're so good at that, people keep giving you more stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. And then also because you're so good at listening and supporting and not being judgmental, people open up to you too. You and I are not, listeners, we are not credentialed mental health experts.
Nope.
We have no authority, no credentials, okay? Except that we're on our own mental health explorations.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you're supporting students through their mental health issues while you're managing your own. And I have no doubt in my mind that you're so good at that. And that's why people come to you. But it's like, just because we're good at something doesn't mean we want to or can do it all the time. Like you said, we have to protect ourselves.
So finding the balance is hard. I can't say that I get it. And when I'm saying manage, the word manage to me means like make it work, you know, I survive, you know, and some days I survive very well. And sometimes I thrive and sometimes so it's never the same. It's always, you know, a mixed bag. But for me, if I'm in a routine and I'm used to a job, I always try to get to the place where I know the job, like the back of my hand. So if there is anything that's thrown at me, like any kind of like curveball, I can easily be like, boop, got that too. And get back into what needs to be done.
That's a way to manage it. Like, you know, it like at the back of your hand so that you can handle outliers that pop up.
There you go. And so that's how I manage. I would say I become very familiar with everything and everybody so that at any given time I can finish any tasks as quickly as possible. So it does get a little bit, some people think that in some ways it's competitive. I'm not a competitive person at all. Like, I'm not competitive. I don't feel like I need to get things done faster or better than another person. But I think it could be taken that way, that she's just trying to be, you know, more efficient than everyone else. No, I'm trying to be more efficient than my inner terrorist. You know what I mean? Like, that's who I'm trying to beat. Like, if there's any competition, it's with myself and it's within
myself.
It's how
you're managing your anxiety. Like, I'm going to get this down so I'm in control of it. So if any emergency pops up, I can handle it.
Yep. Yep.
Because we're always expecting emergencies.
Always.
Always.
Because there always is one, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not necessarily a lie. It's not everything that we believe as people with anxiety or depression is a myth. I think there are things that we believe that are myths. I think that's why we have to really be careful about our thinking, you know, what we think about, and, you know, constantly be checking in with ourselves and doing what you're saying, the stop, breathe, and be situation, because easily the truths of the matter, which is, oh my goodness, I do have to give my boss an extra task in your case. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the truth. You did give her an extra task, mm-hmm. but it's not your fault. I think that's the easy myth for us to believe that it's my fault that I've given her an extra task. And now, you know, I've screwed the whole day up. The whole, like, 2/3 of that was a myth, right?
That's but a good point.
The 1/3 that, oh my goodness, I gave my boss an extra task.
Is a fact.
Depending, yeah. And depending on how we decide to observe that fact.
I think
decides whether or not we screw everything else up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you were talking, I was like, I wrote down like the stories we tell ourselves.
Yes.
About ourselves. So maybe that's something we can get into in another episode. Like what mm-hmm. stories, like you said, the language that you think in or talk about yourself in matters. Mm. Maybe we can explore that.
Yeah.
Well, I hope both of us, you know, can take some time this week just to kind of wrap up for today. Take mm-hmm. some time this week to practice the stop, breathe, be.
Yes.
And maybe that's it. I'm not going to make a whole to-do list for myself. Eat my snacks. Stay hydrated. You know, stop, breathe, be. And listeners, if you have any thing to share about how you manage your stress at work or what you struggle with managing your mental health at work, successes, questions, things you're bumping up against, you know, please let us know. Write in and share your tips or share your struggles, because I guarantee, you know, someone will relate. Mm-hmm. So send those into us. How do you manage your mental health at work? We'd love to hear from you.
Exactly. Well, I hope everyone has a good week and a wonderful day.
Yes. Stop, breathe, be. Bye, listeners. Thank you so much for joining us. Tune in next time because we interview a special guest about her mental health journey. Bye for now. Go.
Hi, listeners. This is Joss from Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health. I want to remind you that if you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please call or text 988 or go to the nearest emergency room for immediate care. And maybe you're not in crisis, but you need a therapist to help you on a more frequent basis, but you're concerned about the cost. Here's a tip. When you're reaching out for therapists, be sure to ask them if they offer their services on a sliding scale, meaning that they can lower their rate to better accommodate your financial situation. And if you're looking for a therapist who specializes in working with minority identities, there are collectives and organizations out there that have you covered too. Here's a couple of those resources. For Black women or girls, therapyforblackgirls.com. If you're looking for a therapist of color, you can go to nopsych.com. That's nopsych.com. For South Asian therapists, there's southasiantherapist.org. And for LGBTQ plus identities, the National Queer and Trans Therapists of Color Network, which is nqttcn.com. If you are parenting as an LGBTQ plus person, rainbowfamilies.org. Again, when you contact a therapist, please ask, do they offer their services on a sliding scale? That will help reduce your financial burden. Blessings to you and your search. May you find a therapist that meets your needs.